Good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works, and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns has aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a dialogue that we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We're your hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves. Liz is away this month. Be joining us next month. We hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and talk of the towns. And just a reminder that we're recording the show in advance and won't be taking any calls today. This afternoon, we're talking about public libraries here in Maine. Libraries are important centers of learning and community building. With a long history entwined with the development of a healthy democracy, local libraries are about to get a moment with a new public television program, Free for All, that airing later this month. And we're so happy to have four librarians from our area to help us with this topic. Amy Weishart is the director of the Northeast Harbor Library and president of the Maine Library Association. And she's invited colleagues from Bangor, Ellsworth, and Bucksport to learn more about some of the ways in which libraries are stepping up for their communities and some of the challenges they face. So glad to welcome Amy and along with Lisa Ladd, who is director of the Buck Memorial Library in Bucksport. Ben Treat is the director of the Bangor Public Library, and Sarah Lesko is director of the Ellsworth Public Library. Perhaps each of you could get started, starting with Amy, to give a little bit of your own library stories. How did you get involved in libraries? Amy, would you like to start, please?
Sure, thank you, and thanks so much for having us. So I have been the director at the Northeast Harbor Library for almost 3 years now, and I've been a library director for about 12 years. And I got into libraries after working a bit in nonprofits, really drawn to the mission of public libraries to serve communities, do outreach. I certainly have always loved libraries. I was a library kid growing up and really treasured my experience in my public library. I also really enjoy helping people, bringing people together, fostering literacy, and helping people to find information. That's a core value for me. And I love the way that public libraries bring people together. So that really drew me in and has kept me really in leadership positions in libraries for the bulk of my career.
Thank you. Lisa Ladd, tell us a little bit more about your library story and how you ended up in Bucksport.
My library story, I also was a library kid. I grew up in California in a big public library in Fremont. I transitioned from working in an academic library, Dartmouth College, for over 30 years, and retired from there and took the position of the public library director in Bucksport 4 years ago, this next month. I too feel that libraries are really, in some ways, one of the few democratic institutions left where we do serve everyone who walks through our doors. It doesn't matter whether you are 2 or 102, we try and take care of everyone. That is really, for me, the most rewarding part of my work is just making sure that everybody comes away from their experience at the library learning or making a new connection.
Ben Treat, tell us a little bit more about your library story and how you ended up at the Bangor Public Library.
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Brewer. So Bangor Public Library was my library growing up, as well as Brewer Public Library. Life took me, you know, to college and then to working at Boston Public Library and at academic libraries, including University of Maine at Augusta's libraries, and then back to public libraries here, where I've been for almost 7 years now. So a lot of good work being done in libraries, and others have said it so well. I know that I've just really loved being at this library, which is a lovely library and also one of the libraries that I grew up using. So it's very special in that way too.
Sarah Lesko is in the Ellsworth Public Library. A little bit about your own background as well, please.
Yes, so I am the director at the Ellsworth Public Library. I've been here for just over 2 years, but this is my 15th year working in public libraries. I've never worked outside of a public library, but this is my third professional position. But before that, I was raised in libraries. My mother was a children's librarian for 35 years, so I was literally raised in her library. I spent my summers helping her in story time. I had a little, crib in her story time closet when I was a baby. So it was always something I had considered going into. But I thought I wanted to be a science teacher. And then I started substitute teaching while I was working on a master's in education and realized I hated it. So I took a little gap year and went to be a nanny out in California and started my master's degree while I was out there, and knew that I had a passion for helping children love reading. I was a struggling reader, so I knew that I wasn't a good fit for a classroom. I didn't like the instruction aspect. I loved the joy of reading. So that's why I'm here today. And I'm glad Lisa just said that, libraries are this democratic institution. And that's something I've really grown to know about libraries. I always knew that I loved books and storytelling and the sense of community. But now as an adult, my favorite quote is actually from Kurt Vonnegut, and it's, "The America I love still exists at the front desk of a public library." And I think that's magic.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the Ellsworth Public Library, some of the programs you're proudest of, some of the challenges that you might face as a library.
We're actually a municipal
You
department.
are. Oh, yeah.
Yes, that is one of our challenges and one of our opportunities is being a municipal department. So we're at the whims of the city council and the city manager, which can be a challenge. If they value the library, then that can be an opportunity and we can have a chance to get more funding. So that it puts me in a precarious position. We don't have a large endowment that we can rely on, but we have a strong team. We have the best library patrons I've ever had from my previous positions. We have people who really love and care about the library and value what we do. Our focus right now is children, getting children to read, getting children to put down screens, getting parents to put down their screens. So we have increased our programs by a lot since I've started. From 2023 to 2024, we increased program attendance by 38%. So that was a big bump for us. We do five preschool targeted programs a week, and then another two to four in the afternoons and weekends, depending on the week. Some of our programs alternate. But we're focusing on kids. So that's where we're putting a lot of staff resources and time into programs to get children into the library.
Lisa, I understand that the Buck Memorial Library is also focused on younger readers. Tell us a little bit about some of your signature programs and what you feel is really important about Buck Memorial Library.
Well, we are a nonprofit, though we do get some funding from our communities. I think in some ways, I'm not sure which is easier, because certainly I do a fair amount of grant writing, et cetera, and fundraising to support the library. But yes, our focus is a lot on youth, and basically, we have really tried to do a lot of intergenerational programming. So we have a drop-in crochet program that is led by a young man that we host every other Thursday, and we have kids as young as 4 and 5 learning how to do crochet, alongside somebody who is 70 or 80. And that is really wonderful, especially as so many young people's, older adults, grandparents may be living across the country. We have a weekly story time that is very popular currently. We have close to 30 attending every week. In addition to that, a recent development that was something that we're pretty excited about is we have a community of Spanish-speaking families who asked whether they could run their own bilingual story time. So we have invested in some bilingual Spanish books, and that takes place monthly. In addition to that, we have a youth book club that is also youth run. And yeah, we and you know plenty of other opportunities for people of all ages.
Great. Thank you so much. Ben, you probably represent the largest library in this contingent anyway. Tell us a little bit more about the Bangor Public Library signature programs, if you will, and maybe some of the challenges that you face as a library.
Thank you. So we're an Area Reference and Resource Center library, which is a designation by the state legislature that there will be regional centers for libraries to help with efficient collaboration across different sizes of libraries in different regions. So anyone in the state can come and get a library card here, and we then support libraries of all sizes around our region when they have a need for interlibrary loan, or when they have a need for answering a reference question that their collection doesn't happen to have an answer to. We have staff who are able to draw on a larger set of resources. So we're very fortunate. We're a nonprofit library that we do have a substantial endowment. We're very fortunate in that, and so our municipal support is substantial as well, at about 65% currently of our operating budget comes from the municipality that we're in, Bangor. But we also receive funding from other sources, including in a draw from our endowment. And that enables us to have a really large collection. Public libraries often don't have a very large nonfiction collection because they have a lot of popular fiction demand, you know, and so we try to have both so that we're able to support that nonfiction need without every library in the state having to have all of the nonfiction to satisfy their patrons' needs. And so that's one of the things that we do is serve as a hub library sort of. But we also serve our community of Bangor as well, and we have an increasing teen program. We've doubled attendance in our teen programs in the past year. We have other kinds of services that surprise people sometimes, like Library of Things and passes to museums and passes to Penobscot theater plays and play productions and things like that. So we have lots of different things that surprise people when they come in and say, "Oh, how do I get a library card?" And then we tell them about what they can do with it. It really does surprise people, and that's true of all libraries. That we always have things that just surprise people when they come in. Oh, libraries do that now?
Great, great. Amy, tell us a little bit more about the Northeast Harbor Library, and then we'll go on to talk about your role at the state level as well. But start with Northeast Harbor Library.
Sure, thank you. So the Northeast Harbor Library is also a nonprofit. So in Maine, actually, a slight majority of libraries in Maine are nonprofit libraries, which means they're privately funded, but also often get a significant municipal support. And our library is somewhat unique. We only get about 15% of our funding from the municipality, and so we have to make up that gap. And so we have certainly have some funding challenges there, just to make sure that we can adequately fund our library and the services that we provide. Like Sarah and Ellsworth, we saw a pretty significant increase in program attendance last year. We had a 23% increase in our adult and children's program attendance. And we also did a strategic plan last year and got a lot of community feedback that they would like to see more programming from us. We've certainly seen both increased demand and increased interest. And so we are investing a little bit more in staffing for programs. So we're doing more adult programs, more children's programs. And we've definitely seen a need as well for an increase in year-round programming. We're course, a very seasonal community here on MDI, but we have a strong year-round population, and there are a lot of restaurants closed in the winter, not as much to do. And so we are investing more in finding those meaningful opportunities for people to come to the library to connect. We have a really nice Friday night coffee house series that we run in the winter and the spring. It's once a month, and it's an open mic where people just come and gather and they sing and make music together. And it's really a lovely experience to just bring the community together and help people connect. And so we're increasing those types of programs in addition to our more educational programs. And we've also already hired a new part-time children's assistant. So we're investing more resources. Our library also serves as the school library for the town of Mount Desert, which is a somewhat unique structure. So we're both public and school. We have a contract or an MOU with the school to provide those services. And the benefit to that is that it really brings a lot of children into the library, which is wonderful. They come during the school day, and then they also were kind of the hangout spot after school. And so it's a really nice kind of we serve many ages, certainly. And it's really nice to see more children and families here in the library.
Say a little bit more about your role as president of the Maine Library Association. What does the MLA do, and what's its kind of outreach to local libraries throughout the state?
Sure. So the Maine Library Association, I'm currently serving as the president this year, and we are the state association for library staff in Maine. We're a membership-based organization, so our members are mostly library staff, library board members, and we are a chapter of the national organization, the American Library Association. So our primary function is to support our members. So we do quite a bit of professional development. We host an annual conference every year that's well attended, well received, and we also do some virtual trainings, different types of professional development. Another really important role that we serve is advocacy. So we're always looking for opportunities to support libraries in Maine. We're a nonprofit, so we can do a little bit more of that outreach and advocacy than other organizations maybe could. And we're always keeping tabs on legislation that might, and statewide, that might affect libraries both positively and negatively. We also look at and help support our members when there are intellectual freedom challenges. So that's, when somebody might challenge a book in a library, and we help to both provide the reporting for that and then different supports for, if somebody's dealing with that on a local level. And then all sorts of things that come up for our members that we help to support. We also work very closely with the Maine State Library. That's the state-funded library organization that provides a lot of vital services statewide. So we find ways when we can to advocate and support those services as well.
Great. I'll just remind listeners they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're talking about the promise of libraries here in the state of Maine, their roles in communities and in democracy. Just heard from Amy Weishart, the director of the Northeast Harbor Library and president of the Maine Library Association. She's joined by Lisa Ladd, who is director of the Buck Memorial Library in Bucksport, Ben Treat, director of the Bangor Public Library, and Sarah Lesko, director at the Ellsworth Public Library. Amy, I know that you and all of your colleagues do a lot of collaboration. Maybe speak a little bit about your collaboration here on Mount Desert Island.
Sure, yeah. So we are one of three larger libraries on Mount Desert Island. So here in Northeast Harbor, we collaborate quite a lot with Jessup Memorial in Bar Harbor and the Southwest Harbor Public Library. We Northeast Harbor switched our circulation system last year to Minerva, the statewide consortium, and part of that was so that we could collaborate more effectively with the other island libraries. So we participate in reciprocal borrowing, which means you can use your Northeast Harbor library card at Jessup or Southwest Harbor, and we work pretty seamlessly together and share a lot of resources. We host collaborative programs. In the past, we've shared staff. Children's librarians at all three libraries work together and do some collaborative programming as well. The directors meet regularly, and Hancock Countywide, we have some regular director meetings. So Sarah and Lisa are also very involved in that. We do some digital resource sharing countywide that has been very successful. And yeah, so we definitely also on MDI share some similar challenges. So we have challenges in terms of recruiting and retaining qualified staff as as the cost of living increases, as housing becomes more scarce on MDI. And then we're addressing some similar community needs and challenges with some of that affordability. So we're always collaborating and thinking and problem solving about how we can work together more effectively. And of course, also there are a couple of smaller libraries on MDI, and we also work quite well. And actually, just yesterday, we co-hosted a breakfast with our state legislators here at my library, so they could get to know more about MDI libraries, what our concerns and challenges were, and that we learned a lot from the state legislators as well. So we always try to do things like that just to bring our libraries together, recognizing this is a small island and we're stronger the more we work together.
Great, thanks. Ben, you've recently co-authored an article in the Maine Policy Review, which is a publication of the Margaret Chase Smith Policy Center at the University of Maine. And the title of the article was Where the Town's Help Desk. Say a little bit about what you meant by that and what your experience was, because you surveyed libraries throughout the state with this notion of serving as a help desk for their communities.
I was so excited when the Margaret Chase Smith Policy Center chose to focus on libraries again, 11 years after their earlier focus on libraries issue, and so I spoke with Olivia Scott, who's the Community Resource Navigator here at Bangor Public Library, who has an MSW, a unique position, although decreasingly unique in American public libraries, and Diana Furukawa, who's the director of the Millinocket Memorial Library. And because I know that we're all experiencing an increase in people coming in with unmet basic needs and then seeking support from public libraries. And so that seeking support takes many different forms, but a lot of times what people are seeking support for is gaining access to services that are where the gatekeeper is an online form. And I think people across like all age groups, all levels of digital ability, and all levels of digital access are experiencing this and are frustrated with it, right? How many times do you have to get something sent to your phone so that you can connect to something else so that you can, and it can be frustrating. But all this two-factor authentication, you have to have multiple devices to be able to do it. All of this is starting to get more and more common. And as it gets more common, people with fewer information technology and internet access resources are getting pushed out of state services, pushed out of basic services, pushed out of getting their pensions, pushed out of getting Social Security, pushed out of all the different things that people really need to be able to do. And they're also getting pushed out of the job-seeking environment. So we interviewed library directors and librarians, frontline library workers around the state in very rural libraries, in the largest communities that we have, different sizes and types of libraries, all public libraries, and asked what kind of experience people were having with people coming in with unmet basic needs. And across the spectrum, we just have every library dealing with this on a regular basis. Now, when people are coming in crisis, they're unhoused, they're worried that they're not going to be able to afford heating for the home they do have, whatever the case may be. Sometimes people's conduct is not what it would be otherwise. And so we've certainly across libraries in Maine also witnessed a lot of behavior that's been a problem. And so one of the things that we've talked about here today is all the different innovative creative programs everybody is doing. And while we're trying to generate all those innovative creative programs that delight people, we're also having to put down that project and run over and resuscitate someone with Narcan. We're having to run out to the one room in the library to figure out why someone is shouting. We're having to support one another as like serious misconduct is happening in libraries across Maine. And the other thing that can happen is people come in with in crisis, and then they can kind of trauma dump on staff where they come in and they tell you why they need access to the computer, but it can be a really traumatic story that is causing them to need access to the computer or to a website or for help with things. So we have a lot of We have a lot of services that we provide, but one of the things that we end up doing is a lot of support for people's basic needs. And a lot of that is driven by the digital divide in the US. So our article calls for an increased presence of state services in rural areas so that people have other options for accessing services, and then increased support for people's housing
Right.
because we have a serious housing crisis that also is impacting libraries.
Sarah, tell us a little bit about more about how Ellsworth Public Library faces this issue of access for services, and how do you serve folks who come to your library?
To the best of our ability. So Ellsworth is the service center in the area. We recently conducted a survey at the beginning of the year, and 40% of respondents identified as low income. So I think the general public doesn't realize all that library staff are doing. I think the general public has no idea that we are on a daily basis supporting mental health crises. We're supporting drug overdoses. We're located right next to the jail. So about once a week, we'll have someone come in to use our phone who has just left the jail and needs help. This is, I don't know how many times I've said, I did not go to school for this, but I'm going to figure it out. And I think we're all of us librarians are. This is not what we went to school for, but we're doing the best we can, whether that's helping someone with a resume or signing them up for some type of complicated online registration that they don't know how to do, or creating an email account. I know here at Ellsworth, we're really focusing just within the past 6 months, we've turned more of our attention to digital equity and increasing the support that we can give people. So we're offering on Monday an open computer help session with one of our volunteers who can really take the time to sit down and help people. We're constantly helping people at the desk, but sometimes we have to say, hey, can you sign up for this appointment with our volunteer, since they are bigger issues that take more time. We're also hosting a Take Your Device to Lunch Day. It's a three-part series that one of our staff is involved in, the Hancock County Digital Equity and Inclusion Task Force. Say that three times. So all of us in the library profession are taking it day by day, trying to figure it out how we can best serve our community with increased demands. I mean, it's constant, the demands on our time.
Great. So, one of the impetuses for this program was a new public broadcasting program called Free for All, the Public Library, which is going to air, I believe, later this month. And it's an independent lens program. Amy, you had a screening of kind of a preview of this. What struck you about this particular program? Because I think it relates to some of what Ben, Lisa, and Sarah have been talking about in terms of access. But give us a little preview of this program that will appear called Free for All.
Sure. Yeah. So PBS offered the opportunity for public libraries to offer a preview screening of this film. And so we hosted one at our library in January that was really well attended. And we did a discussion afterward. And I was really struck in the film. It traces both the history of public libraries, how they developed, how the concept of free public library came about, because they used to be subscription-based. Everybody had to pay to use a library, and it was a big shift when libraries became free for anyone to use. And so they trace that history, and then they also it dovetails with present day and all the many disparate services that libraries provide with increasingly limited funding. And so, as Ben and Sarah have mentioned, just the needs seem to be increasing in most of our communities, and the funding is not. And so, how do you make those choices about what to provide and how to set those priorities? And as library staff, we are certainly a helping profession. We hate to say no. We want to help everyone who comes through our doors, but often we just don't have the resources to provide everything we would like. like to. I was also struck in the film. What they do, I think, very nicely is they profile different types of library users, so different people who use library services with different levels of resources, different socioeconomic status, different political backgrounds, and it really does, I think, illustrate very well how libraries serve everyone in our communities, anyone who walks through our doors. And then also, increasingly, library funding is under threat. Library buildings are, the infrastructure is crumbling. We don't have the funds that we need to maintain just our physical infrastructure, let alone all the services that are quite staff intensive. So some of the digital literacy, that we're all talking about and all of our libraries do, takes a lot of staff time. We found at my library that the most effective way to provide technology training is one-on-one, and that's a staff member working directly with one person, and that's a lot of time and attention, very effective, but also, how do we fund that appropriately?
You're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're talking about the promise of libraries and their role in the community. Given this upcoming film, the other thing that was interesting about the preview was the history of libraries and librarians, and the library services were often provided by women, and it was a professional development effort that really made it possible to for more women to enter the professional workforce. Any comments about that aspect to Amy, and then maybe from others in terms of how libraries are staffed?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, the library profession, it's kind of interesting as public libraries became more common. So, Andrew Carnegie donated a lot of money to build public libraries throughout the country. And the professionalization of librarianship really w started with women. So, women were sort of allowed into that profession, mostly unmarried women. And but they rose into leadership positions quickly because it was a profession that was open and accepting of women. And it still is a predominantly female profession. Certainly there, of course, we have a lot more diversity now than we used to. But so yeah, that was certainly an interesting history that that women really spearheaded the public library movement, moved a lot of libraries forward, advocated for libraries very effectively, especially early 1900s. So.
Ben, you've mentioned that you have a social worker on your staff. Others experiencing that notion of, oh, we've got to expand the kind of background that staff have. You've mentioned youth librarians. Both Lisa and Sarah talked a little bit about that. Amy's mentioned that. Are there special kind of training that you're hoping that new librarians might have? Sarah, I see you're nodding your head. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we recently hired a library IT assistant since we were just getting so many questions that required more than our staff could really do. So it was important to me to be able to meet that technology need with someone who knew what they were talking about and wasn't just me on Google typing questions, how do I do this? And figuring it out as I went. So that was a priority for us. We've also hired an additional part-time children's person within the last year.
Lisa Ladd from the Memorial Library in Bucksport. How are you staffed, and what needs do you see as you look forward?
I'm the exception. My library, I am the only full-time paid position. I luckily was able to hire a part-time librarian this last year. She works 20 hours a week, and then everything else is volunteer run. So I think probably the big challenge for a small and rural library, and I am not unique in this position, is that the expectations of our community, not to mention the fact that our population is very similar to everybody else's. We have an elderly population that are being challenged with how to fill out their Medicare forms or how to apply for a job. Sarah touched on this previously. Applying for jobs is very challenging because everything is online now, and so many people have trouble just even remembering what their email password is. So yes, in a perfect world, I would have an IT person, I would have a youth librarian, et cetera. But it's just me and my assistant. And in terms of where we're at, I think that it's so difficult because we never know, any of us, what's going to come through our doors every day. And we can start our day with the greatest of intentions in terms of our to-do list, but all it takes is one person who may have multiple social needs or multiple needs in terms of digital assistance, and suddenly 3 hours are gone. But we are here to serve, so that's what we do.
And Ben, what kind of what's the range of staff backgrounds that you employ at a slightly larger institution, Bangor Public Library?
Yeah, so as a nonprofit, we are, we have to kind of keep our own books and all of that, and so we have a like people like a business manager and a development director, so that we're able to maintain what we're doing. Like we're actually able to pull in the funds that we need, and then manage those funds properly. And so that's that. There's a lot of services that we have to do ourselves, because we're our own separate organization. But we also have a social worker on staff, and that's grant funded through ARPA dollars that were distributed to Penobscot County and the city of Bangor. They worked together to fund that position for the library. And the reason that we have that position is because of the housing crisis that we're experiencing in Maine, which is heavily impacting service center communities like Portland and Bangor, but is impacting every community in Maine. It's not just Portland and Bangor and Lewiston. It's every community in Maine. And so, because of that urgent need, we were awarded this grant. So that's outside the norm for us. That's not something that's typical in Maine libraries, but it's increasingly common. And there's a book and a website called Whole Person Librarianship for viewers who are or listeners, sorry, who are interested in this topic. There's a website that's devoted to talking about social work library partnerships and learning more about what people are doing in that kind of work. But of course, we also have reference librarians who focus on local history and special collections, and reference librarians who focus on digital access and teaching classes on digital equity. And so we're because we're a larger library, we're able to have more specialization in some of our positions. And certainly a lot of staff who just have to do the day-to-day work of pulling books off the shelf for patron requests, and putting books back on the shelf when they get returned, and checking the books out in between. So
Right.
there's a lot of work that goes into making public libraries run.
Sure. What about the notion that libraries have kind of gone hand in hand with the history of the United States and the development of a democracy that really works? This notion, Amy, I think you mentioned that the libraries were often subscription based in Europe, and what the United States kind of said, let's have a different model where everybody gets access. How would you answer that question? Each of you perhaps contribute. Library and democracy, how do they interact?
Yeah, so I think the concept of public libraries really evolved in a really organic way in terms of, providing access, free access to information, which was certainly not straightforward in the 1800s and early 1900s. We didn't have the internet, of course. So that is a way for people to become self-educated, to understand issues. I think what libraries can do today, actually, we really bring people together as a third place, to build connections, to form community, and to get us out of our silos. And I think it's really nice to see. I hosted a book discussion at my library just last month about the book The Anxious Generation, about how technology is creating some mental health challenges for children. And I was really struck by the people who showed up for this discussion. It was very well attended. across the political spectrum. People wanted to talk about this, and this was an opportunity to bring people together across a common concern, but very disparate political views. And you don't see that in our society much anymore. We're online, we're shouting at each other, we're having arguments, and I think libraries play a really crucial role in bringing people together. In person is so important, and helping to foster those connections that are so vital to a functioning democracy of just being able to talk to each other.
I'll ask Lisa and Sarah if they have comments, and then I'll come back to Ben and ask him to share the story of how the Bangor Public Library got started. Lisa, anything to add in terms of your notion of a library as a democracy supporting institution?
Yes, I think something that has struck me, two things actually. One of the interesting things about working in an academic institution for many years was that I was working with students from all over the world, and I was working primarily in the science library, and there were many students from Asia, from Russia, Eastern Bloc countries that would come in and ask for a book, and we would have to say to them, "No, you can go get your own book." They were used to having to request things, fill things out, be scrutinized for the works that they might want to borrow. And so, in terms of just the very notion of democracy, that nobody is forcing books into your hands, but you have the opportunity to choose to read and consume what you want, which is what public libraries are all about. The only other thing I would say is that historically, yes, American libraries were founded with the notion of free for all, but many years ago, I had the pleasure of attending an American Library Association conference where Representative John Lewis was speaking, and he brought us all to tears, explaining that yes, it was not the case. He for many years was denied having a library card in his own town. And the
Because he
day
was
that,
black, because he
yes,
was black.
because of his color, and the day that the civil rights legislation was finally enacted, he and his siblings marched to the public library and got their library cards. So when you think of how democratic is that, that this gentleman who had such an impact on all of us, in his work in the civil rights movement and beyond, was denied a card in our country. That's where, again, I think for all of us, what's chilling about the current funding crisis that we think we are facing is that we are going backwards in terms of providing access to all.
Thanks. Sarah, anything you add about this role of libraries and democracy?
Yeah, I think for all of us in this profession that it's something that weighs heavily on us, that we want our library to be a place that enables the free exchange of ideas. I think it's really important for us to be a neutral space that can help bring about those community conversations that need to happen. The program like Amy had with the Anxious Generation, I think there are a lot of issues going on in society right now that we all need to be angry about. We all need to be scared, especially what's happening, the silent crisis among children and social media. I don't think it's getting enough attention. I don't think it's getting nearly enough attention. I don't think we're all scared enough. But libraries are on the front lines. I feel like we're fighting the good fight every day. And I'm proud to be in this profession.
Ben, tell us a little bit about the origins of the Bangor Public Library, starting back in the 1800s. Is that right?
We were just a regular library, and then we were bit by a radioactive spider. The origin story for us is not a radioactive spider, but it's one of civic pride and community pride. And I think that's an important element of what keeps libraries funded and going is communities that are proud of themselves fund their library. Communities that are struggling with community pride end up not being as supportive of institutions like the public library. And so the origin story for us is that the Bangor Mechanic Association was founded in 1828, and 2 years later, one of the members said, "You know, I think some of the boys in my print shop really would benefit from having access to some reading material because they don't have access to formal education. They're already older than, like schooling age, and they didn't have access to formal education in the farming community that they lived in." And so here it is in 1830, and they buy 7 books and put them in a footlocker. They're reference books, and they're things like the Gregory's Dictionary of Arts and Sciences, a 3-volume dictionary, and then a 4-volume encyclopedia. And then by the end of the year, they have 63 volumes, and that just grows until it's thousands of volumes. And eventually, that subscription-based library of 1830. Where you had to be a member of the Bangor Mechanic Association becomes like, well, you don't have to join the Bangor Mechanic Association. You can just join the library. And then eventually, by the 1880s, we were moving into a zone where it's a public library and you don't have to join the library anymore. You just get a library card. So that's kind of the history there. And it does point to community members who knew the value of having a library collection together and a common space for people to use them, which led to the development of the library. And that's an important function of what keeps libraries lively today.
Great. Well, I'll just remind listeners they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. I'm talking about the promise of libraries here in Maine, their role in communities and democracy. You just heard from Ben Treat, who is the director of the Bangor Public Library, joined by Sarah Lesko, director of the Ellsworth Public Library, Lisa Ladd, director of Buck Memorial Library in Bucksport, and Amy Weishart, director of the Northeast Harbor Library and president of the Maine Library Association. Well, libraries are under threat. Both local funding, library services are under threat because of we're recording this program in early April. And we understand that there are federal cuts under discussion, maybe already in the works. Amy, could you, I know that the Maine Library Association has followed this issue. Maybe you could give us a little bit of background. We've got about 10 minutes left in our discussion.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So the Maine Library Association has been following the federal developments very closely. And the federal agency devoted to libraries is the Institute of Museum and Library Services, or IMLS. And that has been slated for elimination by an executive order just a couple of weeks ago. Today is April 1st, and we learned yesterday that all of the staff at IMLS have been placed on administrative leave. So the funding for this agency. Funding trickles down to each of the states. So Maine does get a portion of the federal funding that's directed to the Maine State Library. So this funding is certainly under threat. The funding is congressional purview. It's not executive. It's not the executive branch. But eliminating the agency and eliminating the people who work for that agency does call all of the funding into question. So there are a lot there. And at this point, there are more questions than answers. But we are definitely encouraging people to reach out to members of Congress to express your support. Federal funding is a minuscule portion of the budget. The entire IMLS budget is 0.0046% of the federal budget. The library portion is 0.003%. But for the state of Maine, this is very impactful. So Maine typically receives about $1.5 million in federal funds that goes directly to the Maine State Library. And that's a grant, that's a matching grant. So the state has to at least match that funding. And so those funds really enable the Maine State Library to provide really important infrastructure to the state. We're one of the most rural states in the country. And so many of our really small rural libraries that are staffed maybe by one person, maybe by just volunteers, really need the support from the state to provide the services they provide. So interlibrary loan enables rural libraries to request materials from larger libraries throughout the state. So it provides equity of access for people who might live somewhere where they just don't have access to a larger library and more services, certainly digital resources. So the state provides a lot of the digital main library. They also provide ebooks to people and provide some direct services to people who maybe don't have a public library in their town. Visually impaired people can get talking books, so they get books directly sent to them by the Maine State Library. And it really does, it's just part of the infrastructure that knits libraries together. And so eliminating that funding or cutting that funding would really have a detrimental impact on all of Maine and calls into question a lot of, if most of us have to make up that funding at the local level, we have to make difficult decisions about what do we provide and what do we cut. And so it's just clearly not really a funding crisis because it's such a minuscule part of the federal budget, but it has an outsized impact in the state of Maine.
How can folks find out more about this particular issue? And if they are moved to, how do they convey their concerns to their legislative representatives? Where would they find out more? Amy?
Sure. Yeah. So at this point, we strongly encourage anyone who is concerned about this to contact members of Congress. So our delegation in Washington, both senators and representatives, all four of them, the main delegation, are very supportive of libraries, but they do need to hear from people who are concerned about this. So the American Library Association has some great tools. If you go to ala.org/advocacy, they have some online tools. You can send an email directly to your legislator. Also, phone calls are extremely effective. It just takes a few minutes. I've called a couple of legislators in the past week, and it took me 2 minutes. You just call and you talk to somebody and let them know what you're concerned about. So certainly, I encourage everyone to stay informed. The situation is evolving rapidly, but we do we're very concerned about the federal funding.
Ben, we already mentioned your contribution to the Maine Policy Review, talking about libraries. That's a great resource for listeners who might want to learn more about some of the issues. Were there any other particular articles, Ben, that you saw in that, and I'm sure that each of your libraries has a copy of this thing so that it's available. Anything else that you want to highlight, Ben, from that particular thing that intrigues you about the role of libraries in our state and society? Take a couple minutes there, and then we'll begin to wrap up.
Yeah, the whole issue is amazing. There's one article I wanted to highlight, Protecting the Freedom to Read in Maine by Sonia Durney, a past president of the Maine Library Association, is a great overview of the history of the freedom to read in Maine specifically, as well as the principles that kind of undergird, like what is the freedom to read, what is intellectual freedom. So that's one
Would
way of
you
speaking.
just tell us what that is? That notion of freedom to read? Maybe listeners aren't familiar with that concept.
Across history, people have challenged the ability of everyday citizens to read what they want to read. And that's taken different forms in different countries at different times. But over the decades, we've had different legal decisions, Supreme Court decisions that have supported the fundamental right of Americans to read what they want to read. And people constantly try to chip away at that. There are things that people feel that they just don't want someone to have access to that. They think,
So,
well, that.
and that's a library. In other words, they don't want libraries to provide that information.
Right,
If they
right.
go to the newsstand, they can buy what they want, but they don't want libraries to provide that information for free.
That's a great question. I would say both are true. We certainly have a history of preventing the actual sale of materials in the United States as well. But yes, usually it's challenging the inclusion of things in library collections that we, as librarians, are concerned with. But yeah, there have actually been efforts across the country historically to ban the sale and distribution of written material as well.
Great. Well, let's begin to think about the future. Each of you, from your positions, has hopes, I think, and dreams about what you would like to see for your libraries in your communities. And you probably have a message for people who are interested in learning more. So let's start with Sarah Lesko. Ask her for any hopes that you have about the Ellsworth Community Library or libraries in general.
Yeah, for libraries in general, I want children to read fiction. As simple as that. I want children to read fiction. I think something that's missing in our society is empathy. And I think providing children with books that provide mirrors of themselves and windows into other people's lives is really, really important. I think more important than we give it credit for. So
Great.
that's, yeah, read fiction. Read fiction
Great.
with your kids.
Lisa Ladd from the Buck Memorial Library. What's your hope for the future, either in your community or generally?
I think my hope for the future is that our society recognizes how fortunate they are to have libraries in this country and to support us, not only by financially, but more importantly, support us by coming. Just showing up and walking through our doors and spreading the word and saying, wow, I heard this book review on NPR this morning and I walked into my public library and they had the book.
Great,
I mean,
great.
that is really what I hope is that we can just keep broadcasting the importance of libraries.
Great, thanks. Ben, what's your hope?
Well, I do hope that we can be less in the business of crisis response. And I feel like there's just so much crisis nowadays that libraries are really being thrown into that work. And it doesn't make an inviting environment for people to come into the library. And it also distracts library staff from things we want librarians to be doing. So I really hope that we can find ways to have other things that we're proud of in our society that besides the libraries, where people can be supported in their other needs that are causing a crisis nowadays.
Thanks, Ben. Amy Wisehat, what's your hope for the future of your library or libraries in general?
I think, as others have said, I really feel libraries are transform lives. They bring people together, foster literacy. There's so much that we do, and I really encourage listeners to, educate yourself on how your library is funded. How can you support? So many people don't take libraries for granted, and our funding is on the line. And so, if you can't donate, then maybe you can volunteer. Maybe you can reach out to your legislators to support funding. There's a lot we can do if we have the stable funding, and that's a really vital piece.
Well, thank you very much. We've come to the end of the hour. Be sure and join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon for each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for new topics, please email news@weru.org. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balnane House Highland Music recording. Thanks again to our guests, Amy Wisehart, the director of the Northeast Harbor Library and president of the Maine Library Association, Lisa Ladd, director of the Buck Memorial Library in Bucksport, Ben Treat is the director of Bangor Public Library, and Sarah Lesko, the director of the Ellsworth Public Library. Thanks to our underwriters. Thanks to Joel Mann for engineering our program and to College of the Atlantic for production help. Stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and 2 hours of jazz on Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns. This is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.